Vargas, the appellant, Mr. Goel, the applicant.
Let's wait till the courtroom clears.
Good morning. I'm Stephanie Marcus from the Department of Justice, and I represent appellant, the Secretary of Health and Human Services. In these consolidated cases, the district court misconstrued the plain language of both the Medicare statute and the Balanced Budget Act of 1997. Those errors of statutory construction underlie the court's orders that could require the Secretary to make $500 million in payments to plaintiff hospitals. First, the district court erred by holding that Section 1395 WWD3 unambiguously requires the Secretary, in calculating the wage index, to include data from facilities that at the time of the calculation are no longer subsection D hospitals and are not even paid under the prospective payment system. Second, in an additional holding, which accounts for the bulk of the $500 million at stake here, the district court held that the Secretary was required to use data from those same facilities to calculate a rural floor for Massachusetts in fiscal years 2005 and 2006 under Section 4410 of the Balanced Budget Act of 1997. The plain language of that act forecloses that result because there were no rural hospitals in Massachusetts in those years. With respect to Section 1395 WWD3 of the Medicare statute, both plaintiffs and the district court read into the statute limits on the Secretary's discretion that just aren't there. In fact, this court recognized in Methodist Hospital that the statute is silent as to how the Secretary actually calculates the wage index. That hasn't changed since that decision, and the Secretary has discretion to consider the data that he has collected in the survey 3 years earlier to determine if using it would advance the purposes of the wage index, which is to adjust the Medicare prospective payments to account for geographic differentials in hospitals' wage costs. And what the Secretary did was reasonable here.
Are there any limitations on which on exclusions a Secretary could have made from the survey?
Your Honor, there is, of course, and this would be a Chevron Step 2 question. I mean, our position is the plain language doesn't impose any limits, any kind of specific limits at all. But there is, of course, a reasonableness requirement. I mean, the Secretary couldn't just arbitrarily exclude one set of data from the survey. But here, the Secretary went through notice and comment rulemaking, explained his decision about why this category of separate providers, which are critical access hospitals, which are not even subject to this wage index, were excluded. And so here, the Secretary's decision satisfied that reasonableness requirement.
They allege, and maybe we're getting to their arbitrary and capricious claim, they allege, though, that other hospitals, other entities were not excluded.
Yes, Your Honor, I do believe that is, again, a Chevron Step 2. I mean, what the district court held was actually at Chevron Step 1. And
right.
We think here that...
Okay, let's assume you're right about that.
Right.
Move on to 2 or arbitrary and capricious. They say that, there are other hospitals that are also outliers that are left in.
Your Honor. And the Secretary also addressed that issue in the final rule in 2004. And what the Secretary said is it's considered, and actually going back in the rulemakings, considered repeatedly whether to exclude data from hospitals that have closed before the calculation or converted in some other way. But in studying that issue, the Secretary has found that there isn't a reason to exclude it unless it fails one of the Secretary's edits for reasonableness of the data. So if
what are edits for reasonableness? What do you mean by that?
The edits for reasonableness are that the secretary looks at the data and sees if it's in any way there are indications statistically that it's inaccurate, or sometimes it can't be verified because the hospital is closed. In the rulemaking itself,
are you looking at 97 Joint Appendix 97A and 98A? Is that what you're about to read?
Yes, and there are other there's also in the appendix to the plaintiff's brief, there are a number of Federal Register sites where in various years the secretary has talked about how he has excluded a certain number of hospitals because their data fails.
In 97A and 98A, he makes the conclusory statement that we've excluded some subsection Ds, but we haven't we included some and we've excluded these because they're different.
Now are you talking about the decision that's challenged here?
Right. This is because we continue to believe that the wage data for these hospitals, unlike CAHs, are not necessarily unique compared to other short-term hospitals. They're saying they're different, but he doesn't tell us how they're different.
Oh, yes. Well, then he does on page 97A of that, the addendum to the appellee's brief. They're a separate provider type. That means they're statutorily, Congress has allowed hospitals which fall within this category to convert to this critical access hospital status that have, they're limited to only 15 acute care beds at most, an additional 10 beds can be added. So they have 25 beds at most or fewer. They tend to be and this is also in the rulemaking itself, CAHs tend to be located in isolated rural areas. So these are the factors that the secretary looked at when he got the suggestion that this category should be excluded.
But the argument the petitioner is making are that there are other entities with aberrant data that are not excluded.
Well, Your Honor,
how
are they different? And let me just follow up with that, because you say in your brief, in your reply brief, you make the point that you just did, which is that he has excluded entities where the document that don't meet the test, right? For
right.
Edits or whatever.
That's right.
But those are all hospitals. They're all examples where the data is erroneous. Supporting documentation not available, incomplete or inaccurate data. The question here is not where the data is unavailable or inaccurate, but where it's outlier data, accurate but aberrant, right? And their argument is that there are lots of entities. They make this argument. It's in their brief. They list here's what they list. They list teaching hospitals, large urban hospitals, specialty hospitals, and Medicare sole community. They have a long list, and they say these are also all entities whose information is accurate but aberrant, and that the secretary is treating critical access care facilities differently without explaining why.
But
that's their argument.
Yeah, but
right?
Your Honor, the point of the wage index is to adjust for geographic differentials among subsection D hospitals. And if the hospital is a subsection D hospital, then it should be included because if it is at the time of the calculation of the wage index, or even if one has...
No, but you've excluded... The secretary has excluded them not because they're no longer subsection D, but because their data is aberrant. They're outliers.
Oh, the CAHs? Those are both necessary conditions. It is clear from... If you look
According to that's why I was asking you about the allegation. The allegation is that in their brief, in the petitioner's brief... Well, it's not the petitioner, right? The respondent's brief, or the appellee's brief, is that there are documents whose status... Documents. entities whose status has changed, but who are nevertheless left in.
Well, with respect to any such other entities, or there isn't.
I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Okay. Their allegation is there are hospitals, entities whose data is aberrant. They're outliers. It's accurate, but yet they haven't been removed.
Right, but those are not separate provider types, as a CAH is, that are not even covered by the prospective payment system. And so I think it's the combination of those two factors.
Yeah, but see, here's what I was focusing on, okay? In the final rule, and I'm looking at 97A, 98A,
yes.
He says, the secretary says, we note that we would continue to include in the wage data for other terminating or converting hospitals for the period preceding their change in Medicare-provided status, as long as those data do not fail any of our edits for reasonableness. So in other words, the secretary is saying other entities whose status has changed from subsection D to others are kept in if their data is reliable.
That's right, Your Honor, and that's because it says that we continue to believe that the wage data for these hospitals, unlike CAHs, are not necessarily unique compared to other short-term hospitals and therefore represent.
But the only examples you give in your brief are examples of entities who are removed because their information is either undocumented or inaccurate, not aberrant. Not accurate, but aberrant.
But, Your Honor, we would submit that there's nothing in doing this study of that data. There's nothing about those hospitals, just if a subsection D hospital closes, there's nothing the secretary found that would cause him to believe that keeping that data in would make the wage index less accurate. And I wanted to emphasize, too, that this is precisely the type of decision that this court and the Supreme Court have recognized should be left to the secretary. The Medicare system is very complex, and it's the secretary who has the expertise and experience to make these types of decisions. And here he did
so. To be sure, but there's a minimum threshold of reasonableness, right?
Right. Arbitrary, yes,
capricious. Your Honor. And so that's what I'm trying to get at with the section that you just read. As I understand it, the secretary has included what I call non-subsection D hospitals, but has excluded the CAH, and all he has said here is that they're just different, but hasn't told us why include some non-subsection 9 while excluding the CAH. And your answer to that is that they're just different. How are they different? Why are the wages for the psychiatric hospital different than for the CAH?
Well, first of all, there are a lot of different subsection right. D hospitals, but if you're talking about something that converts in a different way from subsection D to something else, the secretary hasn't made the findings that he did here in the rulemaking. I mean, you'll note that in the notice of proposed rulemaking, the secretary repeated the general what he's found in the past, that he generally wouldn't exclude these unless he found, something that showed that they should be excluded. And here the starting point was, look, they're not subsection D anymore, they're not covered under the prospective point, that is a necessary condition. Then to get to your question, he then said they're different in character, they're smaller, isolated rural areas, and look what we found. We found that they had significantly different labor costs, and that in 89% of all market areas with hospitals that converted to CAH status, that the average hourly wage for CAHs is lower than the average hourly wage for other short-term hospitals. These are the and 79% of the labor market areas with CAHs, the average hourly wage for CAHs is lower than the average hourly wage for other short-term hospitals by 5% or greater. So he did specifically address that, and excuse me, Your Honor, I was attempting to reserve some time for rebuttal, and I do see my time is almost up, but I wanted to also make sure to get to the second. Now, of course, if you agree with us on the first point, the inquiry is over, but
on the second point, can I just ask you to focus on the North Dakota comparison? Because that goes to the second issue, right? North Dakota in imputed index was not calculated, but in Massachusetts it was. Right?
Well, Massachusetts, an imputed rural floor was applied.
But not in North Dakota.
Well, North Dakota has rural subsection D hospitals. There are prospective payment system hospitals in rural areas of North Dakota.
But they're subject to a different wage. They're subject to a different wage index, aren't they?
Well, they can. And they convert. There's a procedure, a reclassification procedure, where a hospital can, if they meet certain requirements, can use a wage index from a different geographic area. That doesn't mean that there isn't an prospective payment system Section 1395 WW index for that hospital. In fact, the hospital needs to know what that index is in order to make the decision whether or not to reclassify.
No, but isn't the question, under your theory, under the department's theory, the reason why an imputed index was calculated in Massachusetts was that the rural index in Massachusetts was not applicable, correct?
That there was no rural wage index. Section 1395 WWD3E index, which is required under the plain language of Section 4410, there was no such index applicable to any hospital in Massachusetts rural areas.
Wasn't that true in North Dakota, too?
Excuse me?
Wasn't that true also in North Dakota?
No, because there were rural subsection D hospitals in North Dakota that and a 1395 WWD3 wage index was calculated for them. If you know they made,
I thought they converted to a different status in North Dakota.
They reclassified
with a different wage index, not the rural wage index.
Right. I mean, then if
right,
they have the option to reclassify.
But didn't they do that in North Dakota?
I think they may have, Your Honor, but the difference is that under the plain language of the Act, there still is, you know, a rural wage index for that state because they have, it says under subsection to hospitals located in rural areas in the state. So the important point here is in looking at Massachusetts, and then there are two.
So your point is that in North Dakota, there still are rural hospitals.
Yes, subsection D hospitals.
Subsection D hospitals. I see. Is that what the...
Help me with the North Dakota argument. Isn't there an argument that argument's been waived, that they didn't raise it below at all, or am I just wrong? I couldn't find reference to it in their motion for their complaint, their motion for summary judgment, or any other district court filings.
But the rural...
The North Dakota.
The North Dakota, yes. I don't recall that, Your Honor. But
you didn't make that point in your brief, did you?
No.
In fact, you responded on the merits.
Yes, we did. Yeah. One thing we do think about the rural wage floor argument is that the plaintiffs and the district court seem to have a misunderstanding of the provision that if you include the data in the wage index, then automatically there would be a rural floor, but it's two separate statutes. And we're talking about, you know, different statutory language of Section 4410 of the Balanced Budget Act doesn't mention a survey. It's talking about wage indexes that are applicable in the payment year. So it's a different issue. But again, you don't need to reach that if you agree with us on the first issue.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, Ankur Goyal representing the hospitals in this matter. I think one of the things I'd like to do is just start by outlining the statutory structure, because I think the statutory structure here is key and the government really hasn't addressed it. Congress has specified that wages, that hospital payments be adjusted for geographic differences in wages. But beyond that, in 1987, they amended the statute to tell the Secretary how to go about doing that. They specifically said the way that you should measure labor costs for purposes of this adjustment is through a survey of the wages of subsection D hospitals. And a survey is a snapshot in time. It's a systematic collection of data. It measures a characteristic. What's the characteristic to be measured? The survey measures the characteristic of wages. Congress said so. What is the universe? The universe to be surveyed, Congress went to the trouble of specifying the universe to be surveyed. They said subsection D hospitals. And it's a snapshot in time. So all of the data that's gathered through that survey in objective fashion comes in, and it, by definition, sets what is the accurate description of labor costs in the various geographic areas. I think what happened here is the secretary sought to retouch that snapshot. The history of how this developed
is... Well, that's because there's a delay, right, between the time of the survey and the time the results of the survey are applied.
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest there is a delay, but the reason why this change was made was in response to a request from the North Dakota Healthcare Association following meetings on Capitol Hill. And the fundamental argument and the government's conclusion centered around the impact that was going to be obtained as a result of excluding the data. There is a lag, Your Honor, and the secretary does have the discretion to pick the time frame. The secretary has chosen to do this in a way where there is a three-year time lag.
Right,
But
the question here is this statute unambiguous, as the district court held and you insist here? That's the question, right?
Your Honor, I think it is.
And what in this language of the statute would prohibit the secretary from saying, I'm going to survey only the subsection D hospitals to whom the survey will ultimately apply?
Well, Your Honor, it's the plain meaning of a survey.
There's no date in here.
With the defined universe of subsection D hospitals.
Well, suppose the secretary did it the other way around. Suppose the secretary said, okay, I'm going to apply the index in 2009, so I want all 2009, all hospitals that are subsection D hospitals in 2009 to give me their data for 2006, because that's the latest data. Right. Would that be okay?
No, I don't think
that
it would
be okay.
The survey...
Wait, what in the statute would prohibit that?
Your Honor, it's the plain meaning of survey, and we have cited authority on surveys. The data that's being collected represents the wages that were paid during a particular time period. The secretary uses the term for that, the data collection period. The task that the secretary has is to compare wages paid in different geographic areas.
I'm not suggesting that your interpretation of the statute isn't perfectly fine. It is. But what's the wrong with the secretary's also?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure what the secretary's interpretation is.
Well, the secretary's interpretation is that hospitals that have changed their status won't be included in the survey.
Well, actually, that isn't the secretary's interpretation. The secretary continues to say that in the 2005 final rule, they expressly said that the hospitals that had closed, converted, it was based on the status in the survey period, with the single exception of critical access hospitals. So just as a matter of what the secretary has said, that is not their statutory interpretation. I think mixing and matching...
Their statutory interpretation, I guess, is that if the data is aberrant, right, outlier, they're going to exclude it.
I'm not sure what the secretary's statutory interpretation is, because the secretary has essentially said that the amended language of survey of subsection D hospitals doesn't constrain their discretion at all. And they've asked the court to continue to follow a decision that was promulgated before that language was even added. So the government's interpretation appears to be that that language has no meaning. And their actions essentially...
So your theory is that under the statute, the secretary can only... let me ask you this. Could the secretary exclude from the survey institutions that cease to be subsection D institutions before the date on which the survey is actually used?
Before the date on which the survey is used?
Yeah, it's used to calculate the wage index.
Your Honor, if the hospital was a subsection D hospital during the period whose wages are being measured, the pool of hospitals...
What in the statute tells me that?
It's the plain meaning of a survey, Your Honor. A survey collects and measures the wages at a point in time, a snapshot.
A survey includes, measures the wages, right. In other words, they couldn't do a survey that measured the income of employees, right? They would have, that would violate the statute. It has to be a survey of wages.
It has to be
a survey of wages of subsection D hospitals, right?
Right, and it's a snapshot in time.
But the secretary says, his secretary is saying one of two things. I'm either not going to include hospitals that convert, or I'm not going to include anybody whose data isn't reliable data, that it's outlier data. Could they do that?
Your Honor, I don't...
You don't think the secretary can even exclude data that's completely disproportionate?
If the point is that the data is simply wrong, which, as I understand it, is what the secretary has done and has articulated in the past, yeah, I don't know that the secretary has to utilize inaccurate data. I think there may be a question whether they have an obligation to go out and try to get the corrected data. But what we have here is accurate data. The accurate data, by definition, it is what it is. And when you collect the accurate data, these hospitals were subsection D hospitals during the period for which the comparison is being made. They were paid in the same manner as every other subsection D hospitals. They were hiring people in the same labor market.
Let me go back to my hypothetical and explain to me what the problem is here. So they decide to apply the wage index to all hospitals, all subsection D hospitals existing in 2009. And they asked them to produce their wage information, the most recent wage information they have, namely 06. That's illegal under the statute?
That's right, Your Honor, because there's a lot of other things that can happen.
They would have to go back to all hospitals that converted between 06 and 09 and ask them for data also.
Well, and what are they going to do about hospitals that opened in the meantime in 09? This is the fundamental problem. A survey can't have a mix and match time frame. There are hospitals that convert in both directions. A hospital can convert from being a critical access hospital to being a subsection D hospital. Wages can change more in some areas than in other areas. And so the fundamental problem here is that the survey, which is a snapshot in time, once the secretary selects the period for the survey of 2001, for example, then that period is what defines the universe. And the secretary here has sought to mix and match those time periods for the purpose of, and only on the basis of, what the impact is going to be in certain geographic areas. And the purpose of the statute, which is relevant to both the Chevron Step 1 and Step 2 inquiry, is to set up an objective survey process to measure relative wage levels. And the secretary's mixing and matching of time periods here fundamentally undermines that.
Let me ask you about your arbitrary and capricious argument. Your argument there, as I understand it, is that even if the secretary has the authority under the statute to exclude certain institutions, here it's doing it arbitrarily, right? Because it's not excluding other hospitals, other entities whose data is different, aberrant, outlier data, right?
Your Honor, I think the point is maybe a little bit broader than that, which is the entire concept that the secretary has in the rulemaking record is an assessment that the actual data of a particular group of hospitals is significantly different.
Correct.
From the norm.
Right. And so that's why they said they're excluding these, right?
That's right. And the example I would give, Your Honor, is if we're doing a survey of voter preferences in the United States, voters under 25 may well have a disproportionate preference for one candidate. Voters in rural areas may have a disproportionate preference for a different candidate. You wouldn't look at that data and say, well, because voters under 25 disproportionately favor a particular candidate, now they are significantly different from the norm, and we're going to exclude their data. The basic problem with looking at the data to analyze what the values are is the data is what it is. You have
you
to
collect
the data.
You don't think they can
even
exclude outlier data under your theory? They can't even do that.
I don't think they could, Your Honor. The data is what it is. Outliers, is if the outliers' data is accurate.
Well, let me, I was just asking about this specific argument you make, which is your arbitrary and capricious argument. Page 44 of your brief, you say that the Secretary has not removed other entities with outlier data, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay. And then you have a list, teaching hospitals, large urban hospitals, specialty hospitals, right? Goes on and on and on. Right? You see
that's
that?
Right, Your Honor.
Okay. What in the record of this case tells us that those are also institutions with outlier data, that are outlier institutions?
Your Honor, that wasn't intended as a factual statement to the record. I think what we said is different subgroups within the larger group of subsection D hospitals. I think the language we use is may also have wages that are significantly different from the mean. The point here being...
So we don't know then whether... I mean, what I'm getting at is assume that that we don't agree with you about the interpretation of the statute, that this is Chevron 2 and that the agency has discretion to interpret this within reason. I understood you to be making a second argument, which is that even if it does, it's done it arbitrarily.
That's right, Your Honor. And
by not treating all hospitals with disproportionate data equally, correct?
I think what we're saying is any group, any subgroup within subsection D hospitals may have data that is significantly different.
But you're not telling us that they do. You're just saying they may.
Well, Your Honor, I would actually say just as a matter of how data works. Okay. There will be groups that are different from the norm.
Let's stick with the record. I could look in the record, say, for example, and find that teaching hospitals, let's see, they excluded these hospitals because their wages were disproportionate by a certain percent or something, didn't they? They said, I forgot.
No, the Secretary didn't do any analysis for any subgroups other than...
No, I'm talking about the critical access hospitals. It said that they pay substantially less, correct?
That's right, compared to other hospitals in their geographic.
I couldn't look in the record and find, for example, the first category on your list is teaching hospitals. I couldn't look in the record and see that teaching hospitals are in the same category.
No, that's right, and the Secretary did not perform that analysis, and I think my larger point is that analysis is in and of itself arbitrary and capricious, because a survey, the data that is significantly different, if it is, has to be excluded precisely for that reason. If you exclude the preferences of the voters under 25 because they disproportionately favor a particular candidate, that doesn't make the survey more accurate, and the government concedes that accuracy is the sole statutory objective here in reflecting the characteristic. So if you take out the data that's significantly different, that distorts the wage index. It skews it in a manner that makes it contrary to the statute, and as well as being arbitrary and capricious. And I think that's really the fundamental point, is the statutory structure that Congress set up is objective. You gather the data. By definition, the data defines the accurate wage levels. There's a circularity to the government's argument, which is to say that it's necessary for the government to look at the data to decide whether to include it to make an accurate wage index. Well, that's not how it works. The survey gathers data. You may gather the data on preferences of voters. There's no necessity, no appropriateness, and under the statute, no discretion to start to look at the data of particular groups within the defined universe and exclude them. And that's, I think, really the heart of what the case is about. The Secretary's interpretation really dispenses with the language of the statute and the entire concept of the survey that was that Congress required. I see that my time is expired. So, all
right. Thank you. Does Ms. Marcus have any time? All right. Why don't you take a couple minutes?
Just briefly, I think that plaintiffs continue to conflate the survey requirement with the calculation of the wage index.
Okay, but let me focus on what he just said. You agree that what the department is doing here is excluding from the survey a category of hospitals whose data, whose wage information is an outlier, right?
This, Your Honor, they're not excluding from the survey. Remember, the survey the survey itself was taken and the data was collected. Then because of the time it takes to verify, collect the data, it's 3 years later when the secretary calculates the wage index, and what that data is excluded when the CAH data is excluded when the secretary calculates the wage index, which is actually applied to adjust for geographic differences.
Right. So he sits down in his office, right? And he's got this survey that he did, right?
Right.
And the survey includes all these critical access hospitals, right?
What have now become critical access hospitals, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Right. They were subsection D hospitals.
Right.
Okay, so he's got his survey, right? And now he calculates the wage index, right?
Right.
And what does he do with the, and let's say the survey shows the appropriate wage index in the state is X, because it comes from the survey, right?
The secretary does calculate the wage index from the data collected in the survey, okay. But he analyzes that data, and as part of that, he found a category of providers that had switched to CAH status and were no longer even subject.
No, wait. Now, we agreed before that the switching wasn't what drove the secretary's decision. What drove the secretary's decision was that the data was outlier data.
It's a combination, Your Honor.
Let me read you this again. It says, we note that we would continue to include the wage data for other terminating hospitals.
Yes, they're both
as long as those data do not fail any of our edits for reasonableness. This is because we continue to believe that the wage data for these hospitals, namely converted hospitals, right?
Well, and terminating hospitals that close that don't change their status.
Unlike CAHs, are not necessarily unique. So it's the uniqueness that...
Yes.
So...
But that uniqueness comes from the fact that they are no longer subsection D hospitals. I mean,
But that's true of a hospital that closed, too.
Yeah, the others are not subsection D anymore.
They're not subsection D.
All converted.
Or closed, Your Honor. Yes, and again, the secretary had consistently looked at that and had not found the evidence that data should be excluded. With the CAHs, it was an entirely separate provider type,
and that was the uniqueness,
and because as a category of providers, they are different. It's not just one hospital here and there that converted or closed. It's a whole category, new category that Congress created precisely because of how unique they are, being in the isolated rural areas, having only 25 beds.
Just tell me whether I'm misreading this quote I've read to you twice now, okay? Just help me with this, all right? I read this. You know what I'm talking about?
Is it from the...
It's...
97A.
It's... 97A to 98A.
Yes.
Okay? And it says, we note that we would continue. You got that sentence?
We note.
That we would continue for other terminating.
Yes, okay. Thank you.
So, am I misreading that when I say, to me, that says what the secretary is saying is that of all the category of hospitals that change their status, the only ones that are excluded are those whose data is those whose data does not fail any of our edits for reasonableness. In other words, you have two hospitals that convert. Right. They're different categories. Well, say one converts to critical access and the other closes. Okay?
Right.
As I understand it, the secretary, if the secretary will exclude the critical access care but leave in the closed hospital if it did not fail any of our edits for reasonableness, right?
That's right.
Okay, so the driving factor then isn't the conversion of status, but whether the secretary believes that the entity's data survives the edits for reasonableness, right?
Right, but the
okay,
reason...
Okay, so when... I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I mean, no. I think the reason that the secretary does, you know, analyze the data and examine it in the first instance is the very fact that these are separate provider types and they're not subsection D hospitals.
Okay, but just let's just finish the conversation we were having earlier now. Okay, so the secretary's got a survey right here, okay? And now he calculates the wage index.
Right.
What happens, what is that, the data for these critical access care hospitals, how does the exclusion of that get taken into account? What does he actually do to calculate the wage index?
He just does not use the data collected from those hospitals.
Does that mean he makes an adjustment in the survey?
It's just when he's doing the calculation of the wage index.
He just doesn't count them. They just don't go into the...
Yeah, it's just,
So he's included them in the survey, but
yes.
When he does the index, he excludes that information from the results of the survey.
Not from the again. I think you have to differentiate it because if a survey, plaintiffs also use the school example. If a survey is taken of a class at school to say how did they do this
let me
year,
take a hypothetical. Let's assume the survey from Massachusetts showed the average wage was $10 an hour.
Uh huh.
Okay, that's what it would show, right? It would show a number.
Wouldn't right. The secretary doesn't change the survey. What he does is just doesn't. He's analyzing. There is nothing in the statute that requires the secretary to use every data element collected
He's done the survey that includes these hospitals, mm-hmm. right? And it shows an average wage of $10 an hour.
Okay.
Okay. Now, when he does his index, when he creates the index, does he look at that $10 and say, well, wait a minute, this includes a whole bunch of hospitals whose wages are really $4 an hour. So I'm going to take that out and recalculate the average wage, and it's actually 9 now. Is that what he does?
Well, if they're subsection D hospitals, then there are a lot of procedures. If something looks aberrant statistically or it looks like it can't be accurate, then you would go back to the hospital and try to get them to verify it, and there's a whole bunch of procedures. What's different here is that the CHs have converted. They're not they're not even
right.
I'm part
gonna try
of
once more.
Okay.
If I could understand this, I think you'd really help me here. Okay.
Okay.
And maybe I'm misunderstanding how this is done, but I think I now let me see if I state what as I understand what you said the secretary does now. The secretary, in compliance with the statute, surveys all these hospitals, right?
Right.
Okay, so he's complied with the statute.
Right.
He's got his survey that's in compliance with the statute.
Right.
And then you say, well, he has to calculate the index on the basis of the survey, right?
Right.
And on the basis is an ambiguous term, right?
Right.
Secretary's defined what that means. And so he says, well, look, there's data here that's aberrant in the survey. So I'm going to take account of that when I calculate the wage index, right?
Right. He can do that, right, with an outlier. Right.
Okay. That's what he does?
Okay,
thanks. I think I got
yes,
it.
Yes. Yes. I mean,
Don't tell me that's not right now.
That's the edit of reasonableness we're talking about?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the secretary looks at all the data and has the ability to analyze it. And then, but again, here, the reason a whole category was taken out was because they are unique in a separate practice.
So he takes out two things, those that are unreasonable and those that are unique.
Well, I mean, again, if they are subsection D hospitals, their data is used in the calculation of the wage index unless the secretary finds that it's inaccurate for some reason or can't be verified. But yes, that, and you know, this, okay. The statute gives the secretary the ability to do that. Again, surveyed all the subsection D hospitals, and then in calculating the wage index, decided to take these out for the reasons cited in the rulemaking. The statute also gives us secretary the ability to update the survey as appropriate. So it's, I think that the statute gives the secretary broad discretion, and what the secretary did was reasonable here. Thank you.
Mr. Gold, could you just answer one question for me?
Sure.
No, Mr. Gold, okay?
Sorry.
So, all right, I just want to ask you about what Ms. Marcus just said. As I understand from what she said, they did survey these hospitals, just like the statute requires. But when it got to calculating the wage index, which they calculate, quote, on the basis of the survey, right? They discounted these hospitals because their data was disproportionate.
Right, I think this is...
Is that what happens? You agree with that? You agree that they did survey the hospitals?
I agree that the hospitals submitted cost reports and the secretary did receive their data.
As part of the survey.
But excluding the data from the calculation, Congress did not direct...
I just want to make sure that I understand the facts, which is that these hospitals were surveyed, right?
Yes, as a factual matter, they did submit the data.
That's all.
All right, thank you.